did perish in battle, more than a few had survived their last years crippled from previous injuries. It brought home again her own encroaching mortality. The Night Elves kept a wary eye out, though thus far there was no indication as to what Zanon and the other pair had sighted. The male sentinel hunched low as he rode, a sign of just how determined he was to get his commander to wherever they needed to be as quickly as possible. That boded ill in her mind. Then deep into a dense part of the forest, amidst a small patch of winding hills, Zanon abruptly signaled for the party to slow to a trot. Haldrissa urged her mount alongside his, then leaned close.
What? Listen.
She knew his ears were sharper than most, too, but even taking that into account, the commander marveled that he heard anything. Even the Nightsabers appeared not to notice anything out of the ordinary.
I do not,
Haldrissa began, then paused.
There was a very faint sound from far ahead. An odd, unsettling sound. It even had a strange rhythm to it. The same beat, over and over and over.
What is that?
One of the others murmured. It sounds familiar.
I want to see more. Peering back at the party, she ordered,
The rest of you, keep back. Zanon and I will investigate from here on. If you are needed, we will try to signal.
The rest of the sentinels did not look pleased, but they obeyed. Zanon urged his nightsaber on, but at a much slower, more precise pace. Haldrissa made her mount match speed. As they neared, Zanon readied his glaive. Haldrissa did the same. The buzzing now dominated. It was a harsh, painful noise, and was accompanied by a cracking sound. That sound, at least, the commander knew. It was the sound of wood breaking. She now had a fairly good idea of what was going on, though the specifics of it still eluded her. Ever seeking expansion, the Horde had a voracious appetite for wood. They needed it for building, for their forges, for their growing fleets. And that was why they most coveted Ashenvale.
It would be wiser to go on foot from here, Zanon whispered.
Nodding, Haldrissa dismounted, and then she and Zanon loosely tethered their cats. Highly intelligent, these Nightsabers would obey the command to stay until called by one of the riders. In an emergency, it better served Haldrissa if the animals could quickly come to their aid. Zanon once more took the lead, the younger Night Elf crouching low. The wind shifted toward them. While good in that it kept their scent from the orcs, it also brought a stench that answered some of Haldrissa's other questions. The smell included a combination of fuel and steam. Those were signs of a goblin machine. Several machines, judging by the potent and often suffocating odor. Goblins were almost the antithesis of Night Elves. They believed in the might of machines over nature, and had little, if any, respect for the latter.
There,
Zanon rasped, thrusting a finger to the northeast. At first Haldrissa thought some armored giant stalked the forest, a giant intent on carnage. What in some ways resembled a glaive with far, far sharper, curved points spun madly at the end of one arm. The other arm ended in a monstrous claw with four digits that at that moment seized the trunk of a thick oak. The giant then thrust the spinning blades at the tree. To her horror, the blades cut into the wood as if it were water. Within seconds the mighty oak teetered, its life already gone. But the giant figure was not satisfied with just that. It shifted position and began slicing the tree into smaller pieces. Only then did Haldrissa see that atop the head there was a seat, and that in that seat a short figure with green skin, long ears, and a sadistic smile manipulated levers.
A shredder, she murmured back to Zanon. A goblin shredder.
There had been reports of the machines being brought in farther east, but to find one this close was disturbing.
Wait, Sanon whispered. Keep listening.
Before she could ask why, the buzzing arose from another location. As the two looked, a second shredder trundled into view. The silver and crimson mechanism paused. The upper half turned to one side as no true creature could without breaking its spine. In the seat and half shielded by the armored front, another goblin surveyed the nearest trees. Choosing one, he tugged on a lever, and the spinning blades began their diabolical work. Haldrissa silently swore at such sacrilege. She started to rise, only to have sense make her duck down just as a third and fourth shredder stepped into sight.
They have a major lumber operation in progress here, the male night elf told her. I counted two more before. They are ripping apart this area of Ashenvale as if the trees had no feelings, no importance.
Six shredders. Haldrissa did some calculations. We can handle that many. And then the scene became an even more horrible nightmare. Another shredder joined the others, followed by another, and another, and another. More than a score quickly filled their view, and yet the numbers continued to grow.
Pyaloon, gasped Zanon. This is worse than I imagined.
We must leave, returned Haldrissa, beginning to back away. The two sentinels, their eyes ever on the horror, retreated, heading for the area where they had left their mounts. The wind shifted direction again. A thick smell of fuel and steam assailed Haldrissa from their left.
Beware,
she cried, shoving Zanon away from that direction. The shredder came crashing through the trees and brush, the metallic claws ripping away branches that blocked the path. High-pitched, maniacal laughter cut above the sound of spinning blades. With a death's head grin, the goblin adjusted the levers. The blades came at Haldrissa. She was forced to dodge toward her blind side and thus stumbled. The blades just barely grazed her shoulder. However, despite that and the fact that Haldrissa wore plate armor, the shredder was still able to cut through the metal and rip a tiny but painful gash in her flesh. The wound, though shallow, startled the commander enough that she again made for a tempting target. The upper half of the shredder turned toward her. Another wild laugh escaped the goblin as he maneuvered the whirring blades. The sentinel's only good fortune thus far lay in that this goblin had moved far ahead of the rest, and because of the din created by the destruction of the forest, their struggle went unheard. Haldrissa could not hope for that to continue, though. At the very least, she and Zanon had to escape. A whirling glaive flew by her. It came within a yard of the goblin before the other arm deflected it. Zanon's weapon went skimming wildly through the air, at last sinking deep into a nearby trunk. The attack had at least served to give Haldrissa breathing space. In that time she jumped out of reach, then readied her own glaive. The goblin shifted levers. The shredder marched toward her. The one arm continued to act as shield while the other, with the spinning toothy blades, stretched forth. Haldrissa took the measure of the shredder, then, compensating for her impaired vision, threw. Her toss looked as if it had gone wide at first, but as it passed the grinning goblin, it arced around. The commander kept her expression frozen, afraid of giving warning. But she had underestimated both the goblin and his device. The squat creature tugged a lever, and the protecting arm twisted over his head in a manner that would have been impossible for a living creature. With a harsh clang, her glaive rebounded off of the arm and away from the struggle. Haldrissa swore.
Come here, Purple, the goblin mocked. Let me give you a hug.
The arms swung toward her from opposite directions, seeking to pen her between them so that the blades could do their work. Haldrissa dropped to the ground, barely avoiding being beheaded. She fully expected the goblin to immediately compensate, but instead the arms began flailing madly. As the commander pushed herself up, she saw Zanon scrambling up the side of the shredder. He did not have his glaive, but the dagger in his left hand was more than sufficient for dealing with the Shredder's operator, if the male Night Elf could get a little closer. The goblin was having none of that. The flailing was accompanied by the swiveling of the torso, all in an attempt to knock Zanon free. While it had not succeeded in that respect, it did keep the sentinel from using his blade. Aware that trying to signal the others now might also alert all the goblins and whatever other elements of the horde were nearby of the Alliance presence, Haldrissa tried to think of some way to quickly put an end to their lone foe. She peered around. Her own glaive was too far away, but Zanon's remained stuck in the nearby tree. She darted for the weapon, hoping that her companion could keep the goblin distracted long enough, and without dying in the process. But though she reached the glaive without difficulty, pulling it free proved a much more troublesome task. The glaive had buried itself deep, and even though Haldrissa tugged as hard as she could, all the while gritting her teeth as her effort made her wound sting much greater, it would not come free. Buzzing filled her ears. She glanced in the direction of the other shredders, but they were not even in sight, and therefore not the source of the increased buzzing. Haldrissa ducked. The blades of the lone shredder tore into the tree. Splinters and sawdust rained down upon the Night Elf. A screeching sound tore at her eardrums. As she rolled aside, she saw that the shredder's blades had met the glaive. The resultant collision had made both the shredder and the tree shake violently. Swearing, the goblin adjusted several levers. The other arm came up and braced against the trunk. With amazing strength, the shredder used the leverage to push free. Haldrissa saw no sign of Zanon, and had to assume the worst. With his glaive ruined, she surveyed the area for her own. The damaged tree creaked ominously. Haldrissa stepped back but saw that the danger was not as imminent as she had thought. The tree shook slightly, then stilled. The goblin adjusted the levers, then moved in on her again. As he did, Haldrissa finally caught a glimpse of Zanon. He lay sprawled next to another tree. She could not see any sign of injury, but the stillness of the body did not give her much hope. However, seeing Zanon stirred a desperate plan. The commander hoped that she judged the damage to the tree correctly, or else she was about to throw herself into the jaws of death.
"Zanon!" she roared. "To his left!"
The goblin reacted accordingly. Straining at the levers, he made the torso spin around to confront the threat he believed there. Had Haldrissa attempted to leap up at him, he would have had more than enough time to notice her and prevent success. Instead, the Night Elf ran behind the damaged tree. The goblin saw that the male sentinel still lay unconscious or was dead. He pulled the lever, and the shredder started to turn back to her. Bracing herself, Haldrissa threw her body against the back of the tree. The collision shook her to the bone, but she heard the wood give a satisfying snap. The tree toppled. Haldrissa made a silent prayer to Ilune. She had judged both the damage and the angle true. The huge tree fell toward the shredder. The goblin looked up as the shadow covered him. He frantically adjusted the levers, raising both arms in an attempt to stop the tree. However, when it became clear that the arms would not stop the tree in time, the goblin pushed himself out of his seat. He did not make it. The tree reduced the shredder and its handler to a squat ruin. The tanks that fueled the mechanism ruptured. The shredder exploded, sending metal fragments and bits of goblin flying everywhere. Even before the tree had struck, Haldrissa had headed for Zanon. She did not want to leave her officer if there was even a chance he lived.
"Zanon,"
the commander hissed.
"Zanon!"
He did not stir, but Haldrissa saw that the male sentinel did at least breathe. There was a heavy bruise on the side of his head, and blood stained his face and arm. With no other option, Haldrissa wrapped her arm around the other Night Elf's upper torso, and ignoring the pain in her arm, dragged him from the sight. Peering over her shoulder, she caught a glimpse of one of the other shredders starting to move toward the ruined one.
so low to the ground Haldrissa believed that its operator could not yet see her or her burden, but she nonetheless hurried as best she could. If the pair was spotted, they would never escape. A glint caught her eye. Grimacing, Haldrissa set down Xanon long enough to retrieve her glaive. It meant the cost of a few valuable seconds, but without the glaive there would be absolutely no chance of defending the two of them. The sound of encroaching shredders increased. There were no cries of discovery, though. The commander counted on the hope that the goblins would focus on their own, thinking that perhaps the operator had miscalculated while trying to bring down the tree, rather than that he had been sadistically hunting down night elf prey. She only needed that false belief to last long enough for her to reach the cats. Dragging Xanon, Haldrissa finally paused at a spot several yards away and out of sight. She let out a low whistle. Her heart pounded as she waited. Finally, her mount trotted into view. The nightsaber rubbed its muzzle against her side. The second cat joined them. It sniffed Xanon and let out a low growl. Haldrissa shushed it, then settled the unmoving officer over the creature's back. When that was done, she mounted her own animal. Behind her, a commotion arose as the goblins investigated what Haldrissa hoped still passed for an accident. Exhaling deeply, the commander urged the nightsabers forward. She did not relax in the least until they were far away. Haldrissa counted the seconds until she reached the rest of the party, all of whom eyed her arrival with trepidation. "Take care of him," she ordered two of the others. As they took control of Xanon, Haldrissa faced the rest. "It is worse than we had imagined. More mechanized goblin shredders than I had thought could exist. They are already ripping apart the forest over here. We can assume that they are doing the same elsewhere, I am sorry to say." "We should charge in and take care of those little vermin," snarled one sentinel. "We should be able to handle such scum." Some of the others issued their agreement by raising their glaives, but Haldrissa immediately cut off any notion of an attack. "There will be no suicidal attack. We ride back now. This information must be passed on to Darnassus." "And then we just wait?" blurted one of the others. "Of course not. Enough questions." To the two night elves handling Xanon, she commanded, "Secure him well. We will have to ride hard." Haldrissa paused as she saw their faces. "He is dead," the nearest sentinel informed her and the rest. "For some minutes. The wound to his head was too grave." To emphasize her point, she tilted Xanon's head until the party could see the blackening bruise and increased blood flow, something to which Haldrissa, caught up in the escape, had not been able to pay attention. The commander scowled. Another death at the Horde's hand. Though her body ached, her pulse pounded. "They will pay. They will pay for all the deaths, including those of the forest." Haldrissa urged her mount on, the others following in her wake. She glanced behind her. The body of Xanon, secured well, rode with them. The dead rider very likely a harbinger of things to come, she knew. Chapter 8. Arrivals. Although there would be an official entrance by the various members of the Alliance once the summit had commenced, arrangements had been made for the representatives' personal arrivals beforehand. The Night Elves had been willing to host everyone in the capital, but by majority vote from the others, it was agreed that the emissaries and a small personal escort would stay in Darnassus while the rest of their people remained aboard the various vessels. The full contingents would march in the procession opening the summit. Then, after the ceremony, they would return to the ships until the gathering's end. The High Priestess had finally seen the wisdom of the decision, though not for the reasons her guests had used. The more members of each nation staying in the capital during the delicate proceedings, the greater the chance of tempers flaring and incidents overtaking their goals. With each realm still reeling from the cataclysm, The risk of that happening was very high already. Theramore was the first member of the Alliance to reach Teldrassil. Tyranda and Malfurion met the key representative and his escort as they exited the portal into Darnassus. "Well met, Archmage Tervash," the High Priestess greeted. The black-haired mage bowed his head to both. "In the name of Lady Jaina Proudmore, ruler of the Isle of Theramore, I thank you for your hospitality during this most significant of functions. We are honored to have you here in her stead, though we hope that Lady Jaina is well." Tervash smoothed his black and violet robes. As one of Jaina Proudmore's aides, he also wore a somewhat elaborate gold vest with ornamented shoulders. "With the troubles brewing all around us, she chose to stay in order to continue organizing Alliance forces. You can trust that she would rather be here, High Priestess. Her martial knowledge has been invaluable during these dark days," Malfurion put in. "In that, at least, she takes after her father." Tervash said nothing more, the subject of Admiral Daelin Proudmore a delicate one. His obsession with the orcs had led to his untimely death in battle against the half-breed Rexxar during the storming of Theramore's keep. Rexxar, in whose veins ogre blood also flowed, had not wanted the Admiral's death, but Daelin had given them no choice. Admiral Proudmore's daughter still mourned him, even though his actions had forced her to side with the Horde over her own father. The High Priestess hesitated, then asked, "And how is Pained?" Tervash pursed his lips. "She performs her duties for Lady Jaina as stoically as ever. The great scar from her confrontation with Dark Magi is nothing compared to the scars left in her mind because of that event." He shrugged. "But she will not accept any help. Her stubbornness has always been both a detriment and a saving grace. I will continue to pray for her healing, both without and within." Tyranda shook her head, then smiled once more. "But on to more immediate matters. You will wish to refresh yourselves," she indicated one of her aides. "Please show the Archmage and his escort to their quarters." Tervash bowed again. "I look forward to the summit." As the emissary from Theramore departed, the High Priestess murmured, "And there goes probably the easiest of those with whom we shall deal. Would that all the others could see matters as straightforward as Theramore." "They will see sense, Tyranda. They must." The Archmage had barely left them when news came that the dwarven emissaries had arrived on the island, from all three clans. "This can hardly be coincidence," Tyranda declared, as she and her mate, joined now by several priestesses, waited before the portal. "Could they have traveled together?" "The Bronzebeards and the Wildhammers had agreed to, due to Rutheron's limited dock space, but I had not heard about the Dark Irons. Amazing to think that they managed to sail here with them aboard as well. If they did, I suspect that the clans stayed in separate parts of the ship throughout the entire journey, and very likely even disembarked separately." "I would not have wanted to make that journey," the High Priestess returned with a shake of her head. They waited for the three emissaries to come through the portal, but time went on and still nothing happened. The Archdruid and Tyranda exchanged concerned glances. "Perhaps I should go down." But Malfurion got no further before the portal flared, and the first of the dwarves entered the capital. "Hail, Thargus Anvamar," Tyranda said, immediately recognizing the grizzled dwarf known as a hero among the Bronzebeards. Thargus had acted as representative during previous discussions between his people and Darnassus. "Hail to ye, milady," the squat but muscular figure rumbled. Although he stood much shorter than either night elf, he was more than twice Malfurion's width, and all of that muscle. "Forgive the delay. Bit of an argument over who went up first."
The dwarven race was in flux, the tensions among the clans of much concern even to Tyrande and her mate. Other than Stormwind, the dwarves as a whole had been one of the most questionable of the possible attendees. The Night Elves were pleased that they had arrived, but if it only meant that the emissaries would come to blows, then all would be for naught.
How was it settled?
Not by axe, Tyrande hoped. Thargus chuckled.
Wildhammer suggested we roll the bones. Best idea. We did that. And Bronzebeard won, of course.
The High Priestess and Malfurion allowed themselves smiles. Trust dwarves to choose such a basic path to solve their problem.
We are pleased to see you, the Archdruid added. Thank you for coming.
You've been strong allies. Bronzebeard wouldn't turn its back on that. Now the Dark Irons, maybe.
Tyrande led the emissary and his band forward.
You must be hungry after your travels. These two will guide you to your chambers and to the meal we've arranged for you.
There'll be drink, too.
Both Night Elven wine and Dwarven ale.
Thargus's grin widened. With a nod, he led his group after the two priestesses. Tyrande relaxed a little once the dwarves were out of sight.
Well done, my love, the Archdruid whispered. Best to get them moving, so as not to stir up troubles again, especially if the next ones through are—
The portal flared, and a small band of dour, black-clad dwarves warily stepped through. They were of a pale, almost deathly complexion, and to the Archdruid were almost interchangeable save for the fact that some had dusky brown hair, others a dull black or faded red. Only the lead dwarf seemed to have any true individuality, and that from the cunning the Night Elf could read in the emissary's burning red eyes. Although their weapons were not drawn, the Dark Iron's hands hovered near them just in case. However, upon seeing only Malfurion, Tyrande, and the priestesses waiting to help guide the guests, the group relaxed. Slightly.
Hail, emissary of the Dark Iron Clan. Tyrande uttered, unfamiliar with any of the party, including the leader.
I am Druken. I speak for Moira Tharason, the shadowy figure in the forefront rasped.
His red eyes took stock of the two chief figures in front of him, clearly sizing up their potential as threats.
You are welcome, Druken, you and your escort. We have your quarters available, not to mention meal and drink.
We've brought our own,
Druken indicated several heavy sacks and kegs of ale his companions carried.
We'll need nothing.
As you like. I will see that they are removed. If you change your mind, please let me know.
Druken grunted. He and his cohort trailed after the two guides Tyrande provided. Once the Dark Iron dwarves had stepped out of earshot, Malfurion muttered,
Trusting souls? They came here. That says a lot. And from what little you have told me, they seem to be in about as much agreement with us as the Bronzebeards.
The Dark Iron Dwarves cannot afford to become isolated right now. They need to maintain ties with the Alliance in general, if not perhaps their fellow dwarves. The portal activated again.
Wildhammer greets its hosts,
the short, rather stout figure in red and gold armor roared cheerfully from the forefront of the latest arrivals. The other dwarves behind him added their own boisterous rumbles of agreement, a few accenting their greetings with waves of their hammers. Tyrande stepped forward to greet the leader.
Welcome, Curdren. A pleasure to have you with us.
The dwarf, his long thick beard and even more fiery red than his armor, smiled.
I thought I'd waited long enough before popping up. Those Dark Irons give any problem.
Other than refusing our food and drink, they were very polite, the Archdruid answered.
Like as nay they're afraid of being poisoned by someone, as it's nay so uncommon among their ilk. Glad to hear everything went as I'd planned then.
Planned?
The Wildhammer dwarf leaned close and in a conspiratorial tone explained,
None of us wanted the others to get to the island first, and no one wanted to be dead last. So we all agreed to arrive at the same time. Our honor on that, sworn on the hammer.
Curdren snorted.
No one mentioned this portal, though. Got to it, and arguing broke out about who had the right to go up ahead of the others.
And that was when someone suggested gambling for it.
Well, I did not exactly say it that way, but yes, that's what I told them.
The High Priestess's eyes narrowed knowingly. You were the one who suggested it.
That's it. And worked out very well, I think.
Tyrande pressed. So it is sheer coincidence that the order happened as it did. You seem very cheerful for being third, and the Dark Irons being second is perhaps the safest situation there. Curdren cocked his head. If anything, his grin widened more.
Now would I be the type to go fixin' a game of bones?
You must be weary after your long journey, she said, as if the question had not been asked. Tyrande, smiling back, gestured to two more priestesses. They will take you to your quarters. Food and drink have been made ready.
I thank you for all of us.
The dwarf gave both his hosts hearty handshakes, then led his party off after the guides. The encounter with Curdren proved only a slight reprieve. As other representatives arrived, both night elves again became aware of just how much hung on the success of the gathering, and how much also hung on not only Varian Wrynn's arrival, but his agreement on the most important matters as well. There had still been no official word concerning the King of Stormwind's coming, and while both trusted Chandris's report, they could not help but grow concerned. With the arrival of each other faction, the thought that perhaps something had happened grew stronger. When it seemed clear that no more ships would arrive for some time, the duo gratefully retired. There were no official audiences. Tyrande had wanted the emissaries to relax first, the better for their minds to be calm for the upcoming debates. No one spoke of his own realm's troubles, the Archdruid noted as they neared the temple. Perhaps that will not be a situation during the gathering. Do you really think so? Malfurion shook his head. No, not really. Their conversation ended as both noticed a pair of conspicuous figures waiting outside the temple. Even from a distance, their brilliant garments marked them as highborn. Archmage Mordant, Tyrande greeted politely. The highborn leader was slightly thinner than his companion, and his face was more lined. Varden, to what do we owe this unexpected pleasure? Neither highborn gave any indication that there might have been some hint of sarcasm on her part. They knew the High Priestess well enough to know that she treated them respectfully. Varden here insisted that we come. I knew you had other pressing matters to attend to, but it seems the only way to assuage his concerns and those of the younger, more impatient ones. Is something amiss? The younger highborn cut in. The perfect question, save that instead of something, you might say someone.
Mind your place, Mordant insisted to his protege. There can be 100 innocent reasons for Therabrin's absence.
Malfurion took command of the conversation.
One of yours is missing, Archmage. When was he last seen?
He was one of those with me, Varden answered. No one noticed that he did not return until much later.
Everyone was unaffected by the spell work.
Of course. We knew what we were doing.
The younger highborn looked very offended by any suggestion otherwise. Mordant shook his head in disappointment.
Behave yourself. You will answer with the proper respect the Archdruid and High Priestess deserve.
Varden grudgingly nodded.
My apologies, Archdruid. Continue, please.
Does anyone recall where they last saw him? Malfurion pressed.
None remember him returning after the spell work. I asked all of them.
The archdruid considered what Varden had said, then turned to his mate. I had best deal with this now.
I think so. Please be cautious.
He smiled grimly.
I will be.
Varden led Malfurion back to the location of the spellcasting. The mage obviously still distrusted anyone who was not one of the Highborn, but answered all of the archdruid's questions. And no one recalls at all where he even stood.
There was no need to.
Malfurion could not fault that logic, though it seemed to him that if the Highborn had as much concern for one another as they pretended, someone would at least have remembered something concerning the missing spellcaster's whereabouts. The archdruid knelt down near the area where the circle had formed. He waved his hand over the grass and murmured to the blades.
Have you seen? Malfurion asked of them. Have you seen?
The grass was eager to speak with him, for no one generally asked any favor, but it could only state that some group of creatures had tread upon it. It was the answer that Malfurion had expected, but despite not having learned anything, he still thanked the grass.
I cast spells over the area, but found no clue, Varden offered.
Did everyone head in the same general direction after I departed?
Why would we go any other?
You think we want to wander into those humans you have got settled farther out?
Varden did not hide his contempt. Malfurion chose to ignore the tone. And Therabrin returned alone. The mage looked impatient.
You have asked this before.
And I will ask it again if I have to. You would be surprised how an answer can suddenly change. The archdruid slowly rose, then, after catching his breath, started off in the direction that he recalled most of the Highborn heading.
Do you remember your own path back?
Of course.
Lead on. With a shrug, Varden obeyed. He pushed through the underbrush, Malfurion right behind him. As they walked, the archdruid continued to reach out to the flora, speaking to various trees, bushes, and more, but with the same predictable lack of results. This was not a use of his skills for which even Malfurion was prepared.
Are we done here? Asked Varden at last.
I see no reason for you to stay. I would like to survey the area a bit more.
As you like.
The Highborn departed without another word. Sighing, Malfurion looked over the territory. In truth, he could think of little else he could do, but he had not wanted to give up in front of the Highborn. He suspected that Varden had not quite shown him the path that the Highborn had followed. But even if Malfurion had known the precise path, it was doubtful that he would have gleaned anything useful from the plant life. The flora had taken notice of the spellwork, but had otherwise paid no mind to the creatures involved in it once it had ceased. One of the largest trees shifted its branches. In doing so, it spoke to the archdruid. Someone was watching him from deeper in the forest. Without even turning, Malfurion set the forest in motion to deal with the spying eyes. The trees in that direction bent down, their branches creating an impenetrable wall around the hidden observer's vicinity. At the same time, the underbrush sprouted, ensuring that it would tangle in his or her footing. Flowers, suddenly blooming, released clouds of pollen. With easy steps, the archdruid strode toward the area. As he neared, he heard not only futile struggling, but also coughing. The flora gave way to him, creating a passage just wide enough. Malfurion held his staff ready, although in truth he feared little. A figure became visible as the foremost trees straightened and the underbrush shifted. He continued to cough and also sought to rub his eyes clear. The pollen, while seemingly insignificant, had invaded both his lungs and his eyes with effectiveness. Malfurion gestured. A selective wind swirled around the other figure.
With the direction that only Malfurion could give it, it not only blew the pollen from the other's gaze, but also provided fresh air that helped lessen the coughing. Through bloodshot eyes, Edric stared at the Night Elf.
Archdruid!
The human sneezed.
Praise be! I thought some monstrous creature had me.
Merely a precaution. When others are spying on me, I like to know who they are. Gen's man looked aghast.
Spying on you? Hardly that. I was just on a hunt. I flushed out the prey but lost it around here. I thought I heard it in that direction.
He pointed where Malfurion had come from. And a moment later the entire land seemed to fall upon me. Malfurion gestured and the rest of the barrier vanished. He need not have made any motion, but felt it was good to further remind Edric of just whom he faced, and why it might be wise to speak truthfully. Of course Malfurion intended no true harm to the human, but keeping Edric off balance might provide the Night Elf with some information. You are far from the encampment, Edric. It must have been quite the hunt to bring you this far. Now, would you like to explain again? The Gilnean looked away. Malfurion could all but read him. Edric feared betraying his lord in even the slightest manner. Your loyalty is commendable. But if you do not tell me now, I must demand the truth from Gen. With the summit imminent, any question I have concerning Gilneas's application to rejoin the Alliance might tilt matters in a direction neither he nor I would prefer. The human swallowed, then finally nodded.
It's nothing, Archdruid.
I wasn't meaning to watch you at all. It's just that you happened to be here.
Happened to be here with one of them.
One of the Highborn. You have been watching the Highborn. Swallowing again, Edric continued. My lord knows some of their history from you and others. He distrusts whatever influence they might have. It was something Malfurion had heard before. Those previous to state this belief had all been Night Elves, though.
No slight was meant to you, the human quickly added. My lord has the greatest respect for your abilities and word.
Then he may take my word that the Highborn are of no concern to Gilneas. That should keep him from sending you or anyone else on unnecessary excursions. Edric bowed his head.
Yes, Archdruid.
Malfurion took on a kinder tone. I know that you are all on edge due to the summit. It will go well.
We understand.
Please give Gen my best. The human gave a short bow, then scurried into the forest. Malfurion frowned and turned toward Darnassus. He believed that Edric had told the truth when he had said that Gen Greymane distrusted the Highborn. The Archdruid also believed that Gilneas had not had anything to do with the One Mage's disappearance. But what Malfurion Stormrage also believed was that this incident somehow was tied to the summit, and possibly the desired failure of it. Chapter 9. A Final Farewell. The funeral for Shalasir was a short, relatively modest affair, despite Tyrande's desire to see Jared's bride honored appropriately. That had been due to Jared's choice. He had felt that Shalasir would have not wanted much pomp and circumstance. She had preferred simplicity, and he believed that included her final rites. Of course, there was also the nagging guilt that perhaps Jared had insisted on the shorter ceremony, simply so as to lessen his agony a bit. Attendance was limited to those who had known her best. The High Priestess stood behind the funeral bier upon which the body of Shalasir had been placed. The light of Elune shone down through the temple ceiling, focusing on both Jared's beloved and Tyrande.
Darkness covered us in the beginning, she uttered, and we could not see. We cried for guidance, and the moon shone down bright upon us. Her soft light not only illuminated the night for us, but also gave comfort. Her light touched us from within, enabling us to see even when the moon was not visible. Whether this was entirely fact was not something debated among the Night Elves. What the High Priestess stated concerned as much the souls of her people as it did actual events. What no one could argue with was that the Mother Moon took special care with her favored children, and they were grateful to her for that. Gerard knelt at the forefront, his gaze never leaving Shalasir's beautiful, almost ethereal face. She could have been a marble statue, so perfect did she seem to him. His mate looked utterly at peace, even appearing to wear the hint of a smile. Now, Tyrande went on, we ask that the Mother Moon guide our sister Shalasir on her sacred journey, and that her ancestors and loved ones who have gone before her will make her welcome. Gerard heard nothing after that. He saw only his life with Shalasir and all the mistakes that he had made during it. He was grateful that she had put up with him, despite all those mistakes, when, had she remained behind, she could have been a revered priestess of the Mother Moon. Tyrande raised her arms, reaching toward the moonlight. Gerard broke out of his reverie for a moment, then lost interest again. He looked up a moment later, as a silver aura suddenly radiated from Shalasir's body. No one else seemed to notice, or at least no one reacted. Gerard stared at the soft, comforting glow as it rose over his beloved. It took on the vague shape of a figure, and slowly separated from the still form.
Shalasir,
Gerard murmured. The shape paused, and to his mind, looked in his direction for the space of a single breath. Suddenly he recalled other tender moments in his time with his mate, in some cases moments he had not remembered in centuries. Gerard relived each as if it had happened only yesterday. Shalasir's spirit shrank in upon itself, becoming a tiny, glowing ball. It hovered a moment more, then moved, as if drawn by the moonlight. As the sphere swept into the moonlight, it dissipated, and Gerard felt Shalasir's presence vanish at the same time. Gerard let out a gasp, but fortunately no one paid him any mind. At some point Tyrande had lowered her arms, and from her expression it appeared that the ceremony was nearly finished. Indeed, all that remained was for her and Gerard to lead the bier and a procession of mourners out of the temple, through the gardens, and into an area beyond the city. There, a small party of druids, led by Malfurion, greeted them. Tyrande spoke to all. As Shalasir's spirit has departed her mortal vessel, let that vessel now return its strength to the world. The druids took up the body. With reverence, they set it into a soft patch of grass and small bushes. Two female druids lovingly adjusted Shalasir so that she again looked as if she were only dreaming. Teldrassil welcomes this child, Malfurion intoned. The world welcomes this child back. The archdruid raised his staff. A soft wind swept through the area. The treetops gently swayed. Around Shalasir's body, shoots grew, then bloomed into white and golden flowers. At first they simply outlined Gerard's mate, but then their numbers grew so great that they began to drape over her. More and more flowers blossomed, quickly spilling over her. The effect was a beautiful draping of the female night elf, and Gerard could not help thinking how fitting the sight was. Her serene face was the last part to be covered by the foliage. The flowers continued to sprout, rising into a tremendous cornucopia of color. A rich, wondrous scent wafted past Gerard's nose, a scent that reminded him so much of Shalasir. Those who had come now paid their respects to him, then left. Soon there remained only a handful of observers.
including Malfurion and Tyranda.
This went as well as it could have, the Archdruid offered. There will be more and more of these ceremonies, as mortality catches up with us, Gerard returned before Tyranda could say so herself. I am honored that Shelisir was one of the first. It made her departure a little easier to take, I admit. He bowed his head to the High Priestess. I must confess, I was especially touched when you made it seem as if Shelisir's spirit had risen up to join the Mother Moon. Tyranda looked puzzled. I planned no such thing. I would have been very afraid of offending you, Gerard. She gazed deep into his eyes. You saw that happen? Yes, but Elun favors you. I would envy your moment, save that I respect that she made it one between you and Shelisir only. It was not you? No. Gerard's eyes widened, but he quickly recovered. He glanced at the lingering attendees. I was hoping Maiev would come. Tyranda cleared her throat. You should not take it personally. Your sister has been through much. There was a time when she and I could not face one another. The former guard captain frowned. I know of it, High Priestess. She related part of it to me earlier. The rest I was told by some of those who knew my sister and me when we were young, or who were privy to events. But only Malfurion and I, or Maiev herself, could tell you about what truly happened. I know that she was Illidan's jailer, and that at some point she was his prisoner, and that he tortured her. The High Priestess looked sad. I blame myself for so much that happened to Maiev. I should never have left her for so long in charge of Illidan's imprisonment. I should have realized more than you, my love, the Archdruid countered. He was my brother. My twin. To Gerard, he explained, when Illidan was liberated, after so many millennia, it was as if her entire life had been for nothing. Her greatest purpose had become keeping him imprisoned. Maiev was all but shattered. Yes, that would be how my sister would react. There was never a greater love for her than her duty. Tyranda took control of the story once more. She was determined to hunt him down. It went from duty to obsession. Unfortunately, circumstances were not so simple. Events happened that led to disaster for all of us. I tried to stop a threat, and nearly lost my life to it. Rather than come to my aid, Maiev chose to pursue Illidan. Just say that she chose to sacrifice you, Malfurion blurted with revived anger. Mal, remember yourself. Tyranda's eyes went from her mate to Gerard. The Archdruid bowed his head to Maiev's brother. Forgive me, Gerard. I should not put your sister in such a light, especially at this time. I care only for the truth, however terrible it might be. The truth is, the High Priestess muttered with much sympathy, that she convinced others, including Malfurion, that I was dead, swept away in a raging river, and that his brother was to blame. Nothing mattered but that Illidan be caught and finally made to pay for all his crimes. She nearly succeeded, Gerard learned. But when Malfurion had seen the horror in Illidan's face when he had learned of what had happened to Tyranda, the plan had fallen apart. Through the confession of the mage Kaothas, who would later become the guiding force behind the creation of the magic-addicted blood elves, they had then learned of Maiev's falsehood. The Archdruid had kept Maiev rooted where she was while he and Illidan had gone on to rescue Tyranda. Afterward, Malfurion, feeling that he owed his twin for that, had been instrumental in seeing to Illidan's flight and exile into the otherworldly realm called Outland. What felt like a chill wind coursed over Mayab's brother, making him briefly shiver. Gerard found it strange that neither the archdruid nor the high priestess noticed the cold. Then he realized the chill had actually come from within, from becoming more aware as to how his sister's sense of duty had relentlessly driven her on. I know what happens next. My sister would not give up even then, Gerard remarked dourly. She followed, and the rest of what I learned came to be. The pursuit through Outland, her capture and torture, and finally her part, alongside others, in the slaying of... Pardon, Archdruid? Of your brother. Malfurion shook his head. You have no reason to apologize. This is all knowledge you should have. If not from us, then from Maiev. For a time, we thought her dead. As we had thought you, Gerard. The High Priestess looked down. Her watchers had all but perished due to her obsession. When Maiev did return, there were bitter feelings and mistrust. Her mind had been ravaged, yet she endured. Her resilience is one reason we were able to make amends, Gerard. There is much to admire about your sister, and much we owe her, despite all that happened. Tyrande put a comforting hand on his arm. It is kind of you to say that. Gerard shifted uncomfortably. If I may, I would like to spend some time here alone. Of course. We must return anyway. More of our guests are arriving. The former commander nodded. May all go well with the summit. We can only hope. The High Priestess and the Archdruid each respectfully bowed to Gerard, then left him by the burial site. He watched them depart, aware that he had not been told everything. However, none of that truly mattered now. All he cared about was this final place of rest for his Shyamasir. Gerard knelt by the flowers. Their scent touched his soul and immediately made him think of tender moments with his mate. He imagined her with him. And at last, with the visual evidence of Shyamasir laid to rest, and with his mind now forced to think beyond the moment, Gerard Shadowsong looked to the flowers and quietly asked, "So what becomes of me?" Malfurion did not speak until they were far from Gerard, and even then he kept his voice low. You were not honest. At least, not fully. You did not tell him everything about the conflict between you and Maiev when she reappeared. It was not necessary. Maiev and I understand one another. Her devotion to duty is not something to be taken lightly. She has made amends, and that is the end of it. I am glad. But then why did you not tell him more? Tyrande smiled softly. That right belongs to Maiev. Their attention was caught by a young priestess moving toward them. Her expression was anxious. High Priestess, she greeted, bowing. There are more arrivals below. Apparently from a submarine. A submarine? That means the gnomes have arrived, too. Almost everyone is here, then, Malfurion said. Tyrande nodded. There is no sign of any ship from Stormwind. No, High Priestess. I see. Tyrande exhaled. Thank you for the news. We shall go directly to the portal. Have attendants ready for our new guests. Yes, High Priestess. The other female rushed off to obey. He will come, the Archdruid offered. He has to. That is what Chandris indicated. But if Varian Wrynn is coming, he is waiting until the very last moment. We cannot very well hold off the summit until we know with all certainty. No, but there will be little point to it if he does not come. Now, Mal. They did not discuss the point more.
Returning to the portal, the night elves waited for the gnomes. As the pause lengthened, Malfurion and his mate looked at each other in curiosity, and not a little concern.
Could one of their devices have gone off down there? The archdruid finally asked.